Your tech help phoning with Fevzi TurkHelp. What do you want to know about the technology to keep in touch with loved ones at the moment? We've talked over the weeks about streaming, about laptops, about photography, about antivirus software. 0808 100 5100. Call for free, or you can email andrew.peach@bbc.co.uk. Text Barks and your message to 81333. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning.
Great to have you with us. It's going to start with a question that goes back to Zoom, which a lot of people have been using to keep in touch with family at the moment. Philippa in Winner says, is there an audio version of Zoom? Because we do our family get together every Sunday, but the video ends up being so choppy it's not really worth it. We would like to all be able to talk to each other. Is there an audio version with no video?
Well, yes, you can use Zoom with no video at all, because when you join a Zoom conference, you've got the option of transmitting your audio and or your video. So all you have to do is you go into Zoom, but don't activate your camera, and that will mean that it's not transmitting anything, and therefore won't stress the bandwidth too much. So you can do that. Each person can do that. So in fact, you could even have a sort of hybrid call where some people are on audio only and those with, say, more bandwidth may choose to go video, but you could all choose to go audio. You can very much do that. So,
and it will make that difference. It will achieve the aim of making the signal more robust and less glitchy.
Yeah, so most broadband is what they call asymmetric, so you've got more bandwidth coming down than going up. So a lot of people might find it difficult to transmit their picture to others, but still may be able to receive others' video stream. But if they're having that problem, then the others can also go audio. And yes, it would help, because it's not that it sends it but just doesn't deliver it. It doesn't send it, and therefore it should save the bandwidth.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for the question, Philippa. 0808 100 5100. Sandra is in early. Sandra wants to know, is there a way of using SatNav on your smartphone that doesn't use up all your data?
Yes, because SatNav doesn't use up. It depends. If it's true GPS, if you've got a GPS global positioning system chip in your smartphone, then that doesn't in and of itself use data. What that's doing is it's picking up a radio signal from a satellite. That's what GPS is. It's a series of geostationary satellites, and by triangulating the signals coming from two or more satellites, you can work out your position, or at least your device can work out the position. So it will use more battery life, because you're running a receiver and interpreting the data. But sometimes, if you haven't got a GPS chip, or if you haven't got access to the satellites, if they're not in clear view, sometimes it can a smartphone can try and triangulate the position from, for example, Wi-Fi signals in the area and things like that. So that could use data, but in general, GPS should not be using data. If you're using data, then most smartphones have the ability, you can actually do a breakdown of which apps are using the data, and it's worth studying that because it might be something else using it.
Okay, Sandra, it sounds like a bit more research. Come back to us next week if you need to. Doreen in Basingstoke has been on to say she's not had a computer before. Her son is encouraging her to get a computer so they can keep in touch with video calls. Would it be better to get a laptop or an iPad?
I think an iPad is immensely easier to maintain and somewhat easier to use. And by maintain, I mean, if you've got a sort of a Windows PC or indeed a Mac, you're going to be doing sort of loading security software on it and, trying to secure all your apps and running scans and updating the software and so forth. Whereas with an iPad, it's less likely that there'll be security issues with it. You still need to be aware of things like phishing scams and so forth, where people try and trick you. That can happen with any machine. But you can set an iPad just to update all the apps in the background.
They're pretty low maintenance, aren't they, iPads, once you've got the hang of how to use them?
Yes, and also just their use is more intuitive. I've seen people who've never touched a computer pick up an iPad and start using it quite quickly. Whereas, with Windows is a more flexible beast, and as is Mac, you know, you can do more with it. It's still better if you want to do work on it because it's got a proper filing system and so forth. But if your use is quite basic and you're going to do, you know, communications and so forth, an iPad's got a really good camera in it, a decent microphone in it, lots of power. I mean, the faster iPads are faster than that. The iPad Pros are faster than most laptops now. It's just that their operating system is still not fully formed, if you know what I mean, when compared to a desktop operating system.
Expensive as well, those.
Yes, but the standard iPad is not too bad. It's 300 and something. Now, it's not cheap, but you know, you can pay over 1,000 for an iPad. So the basic iPad is fine for most people, and is now, I think, 10.5 or 11-inch screens, and people just take to them. They're just much easier to use. So if you've not owned a computer before, and you're not going to be doing very sophisticated things and work-based things, then I think an iPad is a good choice.
Okay, 0808 100 5100. Good luck, Doreen. If you've got a question, Fevz is here with the answer. It's the Tech Help phone in BBC Radio Berkshire.
The Andrew Peat Show. BBC.
Your technology question now, 0808 100 5100, before the virtual Peach Quest at 9 this morning. Fevzi Turkalp is with me. Stevie in Woodley would like to know, is it better when you're trying to make these calls to family members over Skype or Zoom or whatever to connect yourself to the internet with a cable rather than relying on the Wi-Fi? Will that help?
Yeah, I mean, if you can. So obviously that's harder with a smartphone or a tablet, although not impossible if you've got the right sort of dongles hanging off it. But yes, if you've got, say, a laptop or a desktop that's got an Ethernet connection possible on it, that's an internet cable, then a cable directly from your router, which is that box, you know, about the size of a book that with a couple of antennas sticking out of it, connect from that directly to your device, such as a laptop, by cable. That's always going to be better. You know, Wi-Fi is great. It's extremely convenient, especially for handheld devices. But, you know, it's rarely better than a wired connection, and often not as good. And particularly if you're doing video as part of that call, then you're dealing with large amounts of data. You see, it's not like If you're downloading something and it sort of slows down a bit, or it stops and it starts, doesn't really matter a lot. You still get the file that you can then view. But with something that's real time, any gap in the service, it's a bit like if there's a gap in the bus service, you soon notice it. If you know, there's packets of information that go missing, you start getting stuttering of audio, freezing of video. So, you know, Ethernet, although it's kind of old school these days, is probably still more reliable.
Interesting. I mean, when you say it, it sounds so obvious, doesn't it? If you connect with a cable, then you're creating a more robust system. But we're also used to Wi-Fi at home that I can imagine this would happen in our house. I imagine it would happen in many houses, that you're there really struggling to get, you know, the online service you want, and it's really frustrating, and you can't talk to your family, and you can't do all the things you want to do. But we don't instantly think, well, maybe I'll get that cable out, that cable that came with the router that I haven't used for 5 years.
And also, if you're having problems and you're trying to, you know, do a bit of detective work and find out where the problem is the problem with the speed of the internet coming into your home, or is it at the speed at which it's disseminated around your home having come in? And one of the ways you sort of answer that question is you plug in directly to the router with a cable. So then you take out the equation that the Wi-Fi may be a bit unreliable. And if you're still getting, you know, poor speeds, then it's likely that it's the speed coming in. And that's something that, you know, an internet service provider will often ask you to do as part of diagnostics.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, you suggested this to me. I was telling you before, we had problems with a laptop. We didn't quite know what was going on with it. And the penny dropped when we talked before that if I plugged it in with a cable, then I would know. Is this problem Wi-Fi related? No, it's still doing it when it's attached with a cable. It's nothing to do with that. We need to, you know, investigate in other ways. Eventually, by the way, you know, I was always obsessed with this idea of a factory reset and thinking whether that would fix it. Mm-hmm. I found that the laptop offered me the option of a full reset, but without deleting your personal files, which was brilliant. It's completely worked. Laptop that was a nightmare, we've now done the reset, we didn't lose anything, and it now works brilliantly.
Sure. The only advice I'd give anyone about doing that, and that's great, Windows can, in principle, reinitialize the Windows operating system without deleting the data. However, things can go wrong with that process, and you should still do a complete backup of all your files just in case that process gets wrong and some of your data, or indeed all of it, gets corrupted.
Thank you. Michael has been on. Michael says, I've not bothered with social media until now, but I'd quite like to now I'm in isolation. Mm-hmm. Which platform would you recommend if I've not used any of them before? Facebook, Twitter, where would you start?
Well, they're kind of different beasts, really. Twitter is primarily text-based. You get 280 characters to make a point or say something, and then that message goes to the people that follow you. Facebook, and you can do it anonymously. Facebook, you can't really use anonymously because Facebook are very keen to monetize the hell out of you, and therefore you can't set up an anonymous account. That's a much more sort of visual, audio-visual experience, okay? So you're going to get far more videos coming in. And it's a question of having friendships on Facebook. So you if you see someone on there that you recognize and know, you can sort of send a friend request to them. They can come back to you, and they will send a friend request to you or accept your friend request. Whereas with Twitter, people can follow you without you having to reciprocate, and still the relationship is meaningful. So they're quite different things. From a sort of privacy point of view, just be aware that there is no privacy on Facebook. Their whole business model is predicated on learning as much about you as they can. They scan the contents of even your private messages to other users. They look at what parts of Facebook that you use, what videos that you watch, what you resend to other people, what you share. All your photos are scanned, so they'll do facial recognition and work out who you know. So that's all a bit Orwellian. I must admit, I use Facebook for business use, but I won't use it for personal. I won't upload any personal information on it. But still, they know a lot about me by virtue of the fact I move and breathe. But Twitter is less like that. So I think, you know, you can do either. I think what you could do, because it's free to use either, you could actually set up an account on each and just see how you go. And one other thing, it's often worth setting up an account anyway. Just if you want to protect a particular name to stop someone else, you know, grabbing that name, particularly on Twitter.
0808 100 5 100. A lot of people trying to keep fit and healthy during this whole period. We've been, you know, doing our exercise walks, all of that. Although, I don't know whether it's just me, we've got a bit slack about that just in the last week or so. We've got a bit bored of the walks.
It's not just you.
Mate, I was quite proud of how long we kept that going, but in the last week or so, it's all fallen apart. That. What technology can help with the staying fit and healthy stuff while we're all locked down?
Okay, so I've been thinking about smartwatches, in particular something called hybrid smartwatches. So there's one that I've looked at this week called the Withings Steel HR Sport, HR standing for heart rate. So a hybrid smartwatch is a watch that looks like a conventional watch. It will have a, you know, hands and a dial, but inside that dial, in this case, is a small 1 centimeter, very crisp screen that's used to give information out. So this one, the Steel HR Sport, it does heart rate tracking both during the day and at night time. That can be continuous or sporadic, but it will track your heart. One of the things I like about this is the fact that this device has got 25 days of batteries per charge. So if, for example, you use an Apple Watch, if you're lucky, you can charge it every other night, but after that it's dead. And the problem with that is I noticed at the Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference this week that they announced that iOS 14, which is a new version of their software, will allow you to track your sleep with your watch on at night. But the problem is when you've got something like an Apple smartwatch, when are you going to charge it? If you're wearing it during the day, as you must, and then you're wearing it at night, when are you going to charge it? Because it needs charging at least every other night. Whereas this one, because it's a 25-day battery life per charge, you can just keep it on at night, and it's a lot more lightweight because it's a hybrid smartwatch. It's not thick like an Apple Watch. This is actually, when I've been wearing it, I've actually been getting compliments on from people on it on how smart it looks, not because they knew it was a smartwatch, they didn't. It looks like a conventional watch, but just because it was nicely designed. It works out your fitness level. It says there's a metric called VO2 max, which is about, you know, your lung capacity and your ability to process oxygen. And they say that aerobic exercise, I think, is 80% of that. So it makes an estimate of what your VO2 max figure is water resistant to 50 meters, comes in a steel case, which again, the Apple stuff, remarkably, they come in aluminium cases, and then you have to pay a couple of hundred quid extra to get the steel case version. Whereas this thing, you can buy it for about £160. I saw it for just last night online, and I think that's just really good value. It's a really nice, stylish watch that does all the things that you need. It does the sleep tracking. All the sleep tracking is very clever, by the way. It just doesn't just tell you when you go to sleep and when you wake up. It tells you what sort of sleep you've had at each hour of the night. You know, how much shallow sleep did you have, how much deep sleep, and how much REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, which is associated with dreaming. And the REM sleep and the deep sleeps are the what are thought of to be regenerative sleep. You know, when you regenerate at night, those are the types. If you're getting 8 hours sleep, but then you look and most of it's made up of light sleep or broken sleep, then that's not so good. And it doesn't just measure, it comes with a HealthMate app that you can run on your Android or Apple smartphone. And in that, for example, if your sleep is no good, it tells you, and then it gives you advice on what they call sleep hygiene, you know, good habits to try and get you to sleep better. And with as with most things, if you measure something, be it your body weight or whatever, that thing you can tend to improve upon because you're getting some feedback of how you're doing. And it's kind of, it's almost like a game, you know, you're just trying to improve it by seeing how you're doing each day or each night. So this does that. And the HealthMate app is very good. I, you know, of all the sort of ecosystems of health stuff that I use, I tend to use the HealthMate one and the Apple one in conjunction. And they work together. The watch can feed into the Apple app as well.
Okay. Back to Sandra and her sat-nav. John in Winnersh has been on to say, Google Maps does use data to get its maps, but NavMe has the maps on the phone, so no data is needed.
Yeah, so it depends. So the GPS bit isn't using, but obviously if you're using something like, you know, a maps application, that then it can do. But again, well, as your listener says, it depends on the app. If the maps are stored in it, as with you know, TomTom, for example, you can download it, and more so Apple Maps and so forth, then it doesn't use the same amount of data. Beyond that, if the issue is with the mapping application itself, then yes, you know, choose one that allows you to download the maps, but you know that will take up a fair amount of space. You can look at the TomTom app, that tends to allow it as well.
Last question. Jenny Wokiam says, I'm struggling to do FaceTime catch-ups with my family because I've got the iPhone, but they don't have iPhones, they've got Android phones. What's the way around this?
Right, so you need something that works cross-platform. So iPhones and iPads and Macs use FaceTime, which is proprietary. However, you could each install Skype, become Skype users, and message each other free. You can send text, audio, or video calls through Skype. It's quite a good platform. You can use Zoom. That's cross-platform. You know, there are various options. One called House Party as well, which is kind of fun, as the name kind of suggests. People get invitations to crash into the house party. I like Zoom in that it's nice because you can send out invitations to people and they can just click the link and join at a particular time. With some of the others, you call one person and then you call another person and add them into the call, and then you call out. You know, it tends to be a little bit more of a piecemeal affair, but it depends what you like and what works for you, but also what other people are prepared to use. So, for example, I refuse to use WhatsApp for privacy reasons, which is, you know, much to the disgust of all my friends who also use it. But, you know, look at what people are also familiar with. If they've already got Skype on their system, then install Skype.
Thank you, Fevzy. Have a great weekend. Nice to talk to you.
Cheers. Bye now.